Thank you, and thank you very much also for the possibility to have this talk here today, which will be about some first ideas about the role emotions might play in my PhD thesis. So I've only started, and the PhD thesis will be about gender and animals in 18th century France. It seems to me that in today's discussions about animal rights and animal welfare, opinions that involve an emotional perspective on animals are often not taken seriously. So we also heard this this morning that emotions and the ability to suffer always have to be proved scientifically, and we also hear that emotional approaches can also be ridiculized or criticized in the anti-vivisections debate. So my paper questions this refusal of emotions and shows that our modern rational approach is not necessarily the only way to deal with animal rights. In the first part of my talk, I will show that philosophers in the 18th century understood emotions as a crucial approach to ethics and morals towards animals. I will also explain the historical reasons behind this view. In the second part, I will ask why this emotional take on animals got lost during the modern era. I will argue that this may be closely connected to the development of modern gender roles that have been established from the 18th century onwards. Before the 18th century, emotions had often been associated with an uncontrollable, sinful body and were therefore seen as a negative influence on the mind. This changed during the era of Enlightenment. Scientists now discovered the usefulness of the body and the importance of the connection between body and mind. For example, they found that nerves transmitted stimuli from the outside world to the mind through the sensitivity of the body. According to such an understanding, bodily feelings were not seen as an obstacle to mind anymore, but rather as a vital inspiration and guide for reason and morals. As Jean-Jacques Rousseau put it in his education treatise, since whatever enters the human understanding is introduced by the senses, man's primitive reason is of the sensitive kind and serves for a basis of the intellectual. Our first masters of philosophy are our feet, our hands, our eyes. This importance of the sensitive body for the mind led to a reevaluation of emotions in general. To find out how these emotions actually worked and how they transmitted stimuli to the mind, anatomists often dissected animals and compared their bodies to human ones. One of these anatomists, Julien Offray de Lamettrie, recognized that if animals had the exact same organs and nerves as humans did, they also had to have some sort of feelings and even some sort of reason, similar like humans. Subsequently, the new view on the connection between bodies, minds, and feelings was also applied to animals. The compared anatomy shows us the same parts, the same functions. Everywhere it is the same kind of game, the same kind of spectacle. Animals lack neither the inner nor the outer senses. As a consequence, they are gifted like us with all the spiritual faculties which depend on them, like perception, memory, imagination, judgment, and reason. So according to Lamettrie, animals possess the same sensitive bodies as humans. Therefore, they also have the same kind of reasons and feelings interacting with each other through the newly discovered connection between mind and body. According to this view, animals could not be machines without feelings anymore, as René Descartes had famously claimed in the previous century. Instead of this Cartesian distinction between higher human feelings and the machine-like reactions of animals, animals for Lamettrie possessed the prerequisites to actually have the same emotions like humans. They could even be observed expressing their feelings in their own emotional language, Lamettrie argued. Experience proves the ability to feel not only for humans, but also for animals. I'm talking about the language of affections, like moaning, cries, caresses, flight, sighs, singing. In one word, all expressions of pain, sadness, aversion, fear, bravery, submissiveness, anger, pleasure, joy, tenderness, etc. An energetic language like this has much more power to convince us than all the sophisms brought forward by Descartes. So as you can see, the insight that animals had emotion for Lamettrie was kind of a question of common sense. But not only anatomists elaborated on the question of human and animal emotions. natural law philosophers looked at animals for inspiration too. They were interested in the way humans used to live together in the original state of nature. To imagine what the original human might have been like, they often compared him to animals, because animals obviously still seem to behave in a very natural kind of way, whereas humans would have been deformed by culture and society, at least for these philosophers. In this context, Rousseau argued that both humans and animals had originally behaved according to two emotional principles before humans were corrupted by societal demands of rationality. These two basic emotional principles were self-preservation and pity. I quote Rousseau. "I think I can perceive in it, in the soul, two principles prior to reason, one of them deeply interesting us in our own welfare and preservation, and the other exciting a natural repugnance at seeing any other sensible being, and particularly any of our own species, suffer pain or death." Pity, according to Rousseau, was kind of like a trick by nature to make sure humans and animals only killed each other if it was really necessary for their self-preservation. This way, the survival of both human and other animal species would have been naturally guaranteed. For this reason, not only humans, but also animals possessed a natural kind of affection towards others. For example, Rousseau argued that one could often see horses who tried not to step on any other living being because of their natural feeling of pity. Also, one could hear the sad mooing of cows who were moved by the horrible treatment of their fellow beings when they entered a butcher shop. For Rousseau, this principle of pity common for humans and animals also meant that animals should be included into natural law, at least to a certain extent. I quote, "It seems, in fact, that if I'm obliged to refrain from doing any harm to my neighbor, it is less because he is a reasonable being than because he is a sentient one. And a quality which is common to beast and man ought to give the former the right not to be uselessly ill-treated by the latter." Unfortunately, according to Rousseau, humans have been corrupted by modern civilization and now barely listen to this natural feeling of pity anymore. If they still did, they would have to treat animals very differently. So as we have seen, emotions were very important for the thinking about how to treat animals in the 18th century. So why did this approach become less legitimate in the modern age? To understand this transition, it is crucial to look at the development of gender roles at the end of the 18th century. Gender historians such as Claudia Honecke have shown that feelings and sensitivity became more and more associated with women by the end of the century. Even more importantly, because of the new authority of the natural sciences during the period, emotions were also naturalized. So that is, scientists understood emotions as an unchangeable and natural part of women's bodies rather than as part of their individual character or social upbringing. For example, physiologists argued that women's fine nerve cords actually made them more sensitive to outside stimuli and therefore also more emotional than men. Also, scientists thought that women had very specific kinds of emotions. The physician Pierre Roussel, for example, argued that the natural passions of every living being were determined by its bodily strength or weakness. According to this view, both women and also certain kinds of animals primarily had soft emotions like pity or sweetness. I quote, "The passions in all animated beings depend on the means that nature gave them to satisfy them. Examining all species of animals, one will see that the moral is always related to the bodily. Anger and cruelty always go along with strength, and timidity is always a part of weakness. Soft passions are the most common for women because they correspond the most to her physical constitution. Sentimentality, compassion, kindness, and love are the feelings that she has the most often." Roussel also thought that women were more likely to have soft emotions because they were actually too weak to defend themselves, whereas men were more aggressive or even cruel because their strength made them natural attackers. Additionally, women for Roussel were more pitiful than men because they naturally identified themselves with other weak creatures themselves. It seems that the natural principles of pity and self-preservation Rousseau had established for all humans in the original state of nature are now attributed to two distinct gendered behaviors, female pity and male self-preservation. This gendering could also be seen as a simplified version of Rousseau's idea that women were actually less corrupted by society than men, they were closer to the state of nature, and if we follow Rousseau's argument, that would obviously also make them more pitiful than men. These ideas, as I would argue, had an impact on how men and women were thought to treat animals in different ways. For example, in 1802, the Institut National in Paris, and you can think of this institute as kind of a think tank after the French Revolution. So this institute launched a debate on the correct moral treatment of animals. In their suggestions, several authors praised specifically women for restraining cruel male behavior towards animals. I quote, "In fact, regardless of them, the women, being weak and dependent like them, the animals, and having pity for a destiny that they themselves share, or loving them, women protect animals and confidently show the affection they feel for them. It seems that they want to teach them, the men, how they have to behave towards weak and sensitive beings. One has to admit that their kind lessons are not always lost and that they have moderated the power of men over animals." Unfortunately, in my view, this praise of women's sensitivity did not mean that women should actually promote laws to protect animals. Rather, by the end of the century, women were excluded from the realm of politics, and this not least because of their allegedly natural emotionality. After the French Revolution, the control of emotions through an independent mind became more important once again, especially within the newly developing public sphere. Women and animals were lacking this prerequisite of an abstracting, controlling mind and were therefore excluded from participation in politics. Instead, it was suggested that women should use their more instinctive emotions within the domestic realm of the house and family to fulfill their natural roles as housewives and mothers. This exclusion of women from politics could also build upon Rousseau's opinion that women should actually protect their natural emotions by staying in the domestic realm rather than being corrupted by politics like man already had. Even though women's emotionality was appreciated within their domestic role, their inability to abstract from these instinctive emotions excluded them from fraternity and friendship, the bonds of male citizenship, because these feelings needed more reflection. Interestingly enough, the inability to abstract from spontaneous feelings, as we also have heard already, and to act independently from them was also attributed to animals, and still is, probably. The famous naturalist Georges-Louis Leclerc de Buffon, for example, compared the blind and non-reflective feelings of animals to those of women and children. Speaking of a dog, he says, "This kind of friendship is like the one of a woman for her canary, or a child for its toy, etc. Both are little reflected, both are just a blind feeling. The one of the animal is just more natural, since it is founded on need, whereas the object of the other is nothing but an insipid amusement in which the soul has no part." As this citation shows, women were also closely associated with pet animals, because of their supposedly blind emotional relationships with them. In this context, women's emotions towards animals were also criticized for being too excessive. As Jodie Wyatt has shown, for example, satires discussed the possibility that some women actually had sexual relationships with their lap dogs while neglecting their actual duties towards their husband. And I think that's also beautifully illustrated by this painting of Jean-Honoré Fragonard. These sometimes positive and sometimes negative associations of women, emotions, and pet animals are especially interesting when we consider that a lot of historians think that the pet animals in a modern sense only became more common in the 18th and 19th century. It seems therefore possible that the separation between pets and livestock animals in this time overlapped with the separation of women and men between the private and public sphere that I've already talked about. Historians should look more closely at the connections between the roles of women and men interacting with different kinds of private and public animals in that time. Is it possible that emotions and pity were now only applicable to pet animals as they became more and more reduced to the female realm of the house and family? And what about livestock animals or wild animals in the modern age? Would they rather be treated according to male principles of rationality aimed at self-preservation? These connections between animals and ideas about gender are exactly what I'm interested in my PhD thesis. I'm, like I said, at a very early stage of my research, but I hope to already have shown the usefulness of combining perspective on gender history and human-animal history to find out more about these views on animals in the 18th century. To understand how these views were constructed and how they changed throughout history also helps us to gain a critical perspective on how we treat animals in our own time and what gender might have to do with it. Thank you.